everybody. Welcome to episode 364 of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm your host, Jace.
And this is Nick.
And this is our Justice League Spotlight episode. We are going to be doing these Justice League Spotlights for at least the first few issues. How long we continue, I suppose, depends on how long the title seems so integral to what's going on with the overall DC universe. So we're literally going to go just about panel by panel, if maybe only page by page, but we're certainly going to dive in and notice everything we can notice, everything there is to notice, hopefully, and kind of dissect and give our thoughts about what's going on. So it is written by Scott Snyder. We've got pencils by Jim Chung, inks by Mark Morales, colors by Tameu Morey, and letters by Tom Napolitano. And the cover, at least the one I have anyway, is by Jim Chung and Laura Martin. There's also a Jim Lee, Scott Williams, Alex Sinclair variant that has Batman on it that I ordered from DCBS. So that should be coming. That should be coming as well. So we dive into the first page. It looks like some kind of comet, I guess.
In or space. The Phoenix Force. Wrong galaxy. Universe.
It says, there is no warning. And then we pull back in the second panel. And these panels are horizontal across the page, kind of widescreen, if you will. So we pull back. We see a caption that says 85,000 years from now. And it says, it simply breaks free, animates, and begins streaking toward its target. So again, there is no warning, and it's now heading toward its target. And in the foreground of that second panel, that's 85,000 years into the future, we see someone. It looks like Our Man. Well, actually, it says, because Our Man himself says, my God, Cal. A reference to Kal-El, perhaps. I don't know. It doesn't say Kal-El. It just says Cal. And he responds, I see it, Our Man. But it could be Superman. There's definitely a red cape, a blackish red costume. And then we also see a female figure in the background that looks Wonder Woman-ish, possibly. So clearly some kind of future Justice League, wouldn't you say, Nick?
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Like, because how long do Kryptonians live? Like, that would probably be some descendant of even, like, John or something, I'm thinking. Isn't that his son's name? Yeah, Jonathan.
Yeah. I mean, it could be Superman himself. I mean, he seems to have stopped aging. And there's been plenty of stories in the far future where it's, you know, he's still alive. There have been plenty of stories in the far future where he's not alive. So,
yeah.
Anyway, the next panel, we flash back to 85,000 years ago. And we see one of the monitors. After all we've built. And behind it, space-time swirls like road dust. And that's the caption. So, apparently... I mean, just based on the progression of what we see here, it's like 85,000 years from now, 85,000 years in the past, we're seeing the same meteor taking the same action. But just to drive the point home, Scott Snyder puts behind it, space-time swirls like road dust. So it's clear to me that this meteor, this ship, this whatever it is that's flying through space is not only flying through outer space, but it's also speeding through time, right? It either is...
I was going to ask you if you thought that.
Well, it's either flipping back and forth between all these different eras instantaneously, or it exists in all these areas instantaneously.
That's what I thought at first, too, when I read it. Almost in like a Dr. Manhattan, being in all planes and times at the same thing type of...
Yeah, exactly. Time is not absolute. And then we see actually 5,000 years from now, we see Commandy, the boy Commando, and his companion, Dr. Canis. Commandy, that thing's headed toward Earth. Maybe we should turn the arc back. There's no time, Dr. Canis. And then we see now. And we see Hera. We see Phantom Stranger. We see a Guardian of the Universe. I'll assume it's Ganthet. To the far left, that looks like Highfather.
He says Ganthet, so yeah.
Oh, he does say Ganthet. You're right.
Yeah.
That's what Phantom Stranger says. But yeah, that looks like Highfather, Orion, not Orion, but yeah, Highfather of the New Gods to the far left. And to the far right, that looks like the Wizard Shazam. Now, according to the Mr. Miracle series going on by Tom King and Mitch Gerrards right now, Highfather's dead. So not sure how this fits in, where it fits in. Maybe it's Mr. Miracle that comes after this. Not 100% sure that's Highfather. Also, I thought that the Wizard Shazam was dead currently as well, but, you know, it's comic books, so maybe not. Maybe he's been brought back. Not sure. But what they're talking about, Hera says, is that? Ganthet replies, yes, Hera, the beginning and the end. Stranger, can we stop it? Phantom Stranger, no, it would escape us, Ganthet. Besides, it's not up to us. So the next page, maybe my favorite page of the entire issue. It's Washington, D.C., and we see a continuation of Phantom Stranger's dialogue. No, it would escape us, Ganthet. Besides, it's not up to us. It never has been. So clearly some of the more powerful beings in the DC universe aren't. They don't feel it's their responsibility to stop this thing, whatever it is. But on the next page, it's a double page spread. It's Washington, D.C. It's the Hall of Justice. And it looks just like it did from the cartoons. And it looks amazing. It looks so cool. And
it's glorious.
Yeah, it really is. It's like, it feels like it means something. It's been a long time since we've seen this kind of Hall of Justice in the DCU, so I'm so happy that Scott Snyder brought it back. And the narration's really cool too. The building gleams in a way that stops visitors in their tracks. People assume the walls are marble, but they're actually made of a calcite from the Butterfly Nebula. Superman chose it because it catches and holds on to light in ways earthly carbonates can't. They see that even on moonless nights, the hall glows like it's high noon. That is just so cool. It's a beacon, right? It's a beacon of justice. It's a beacon of safety, somewhere that you can go if you need help. Because as we go through the rest of the dialogue on the double page spread, we see that there are certain areas that are open to the public. The first panel to the bottom left talks about the heroes debated over which costumes to include in the entryway. But in truth, the vote was quick and unanimous, as it should be. Wonder Woman there. I'm stuck in the wrong universe. Yeah, too much Wolverine weapon loss talk lately. Wonder Woman said with a nod, we include everyone. Also, the items in the trophy room are depowered. Still, a committee called in Batman to ask why he believed the display was secure. And this is great. And don't say, because I'm Batman, said one senator. Batman responded that if they doubted him, they should give it their best shot.
And I love the next one the best.
Yeah, this is Scott Snyder's favorite line too. At which point it's possible, if you slow down the footage of Batman's face, form what some theorize to be his version of a smile. So
I love that line.
Just a little twitch in the corner of the mouth. You know, if you doubt me, you should give it a try. Little twitch. Yeah, that's Batman smiling. But in the end, all public areas were approved by that committee. Yet only a fraction of the hall is open to the public. How much lies behind the walls, no one knows. And we get a panel where we see a door in the background that's glowing, and then it zooms in on the doorknob, and there's this symbol there that kind of mirrors the silhouette of the hall itself, which is kind of interesting. So it's a secret door. You have to be connected telepathically by the League's new chairman, Martian Manhunter. The most rumored door is said to be behind the Kowloon Fountain. And can you see the door? If you can, then turn the knob and enter. So it's clear that Scott Snyder is setting Martian Manhunter, John Jones, up to be a very central member of this version of the Justice League. He was originally a founding member of the Justice League in the Silver Age, but probably the least well-known of the founding members. And then when they rebooted in New 52, rebooted the DC Universe, they replaced him with Cyborg, which I didn't necessarily care for, but it made sense in today's technologically saturated world to have somebody like Cyborg be part of the Justice League. I didn't mind him being part of the Justice League. I didn't even mind him being a founding member. I just didn't like the removal of Martian Manhunter. I think Martian Manhunter is one of the most underrated heroes of the DC universe. He's just as powerful as Superman, if not more, because not only can he pretty much do everything Superman does, he's got super strength, he's got super speed, he's got invulnerability, he can fly, he's got telepathic powers on top of that, plus he can turn invisible, plus he can shapeshift. I mean, the guy can do it all. He's awesome.
So with this long, I don't have a long history with Martian Manhunter. Is he completely trustworthy then? Because he strikes me as the Justice League's version of Vision. And Vision's usually someone you can trust, but...
But there's always the possibility that he could go off the rails?
Yeah.
Because he's...
I don't know. Like, Martian Manhunter seems to have so much knowledge and control going on that it seems like...
I think there may have been various stories over the years where they kind of brought that up, whether or not he could be fully trusted because, you know, he is from Mars. And I haven't read every Martian Manhunter story, obviously, but I think there may have been some stories. For some reason, I have this impression that he didn't necessarily do what was best for Earth if he had the possibility to bring his Martian species back. Like, if you make somebody choose between their adopted homeworld and their actual wife and child, that's a pretty tough decision, right? I think any of us in that situation would have a tough time, you know, making a decision and choosing the moral high ground versus what would, you know, make us happy. So I'm not 100% sure, but
he seems like a character that with his knowledge and like all that he might be the one to make a decision that's better for the universe than the league is just how he strikes me in this issue. Like when it comes down to we'll see how it develops, but it seems
I would say that he is certainly a voice of reason. I don't think he lets emotion kind of come into it as much as other league members do, including Superman even.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's more able to see the big picture and stay impartial more so than any of the other members.
That's why I don't trust him.
Well, I mean, he's got to do what's – I think he kind of subscribes to the idea of utilitarianism. So he's going to make the decision that's the best for the greatest number of people.
The needs of the many outweigh the needs of the few with Martian Manhunter.
A little bit. But he's still a hero, and I'm sure there's many times where he's – chosen the needs of the few, the immediate needs of the few over the future needs of the many. I don't think he's going around saying, well, if you want to make an omelet, you got to break some eggs. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Not to that extent. So, all right. Well, moving on to the next page, we see the league is kind of separated into different strike teams, I'll say. And the Martian Manhunter, we come to find out, is floating above the Earth in a lotus position, linking all these different teams together telepathically. And these teams are fighting different Neanderthal tribes in different kind of environmental spheres of the universe. So Martian Manhunter is asking for a status report, checks in first with the team that's in the subterranean theater. It looks like it's Green Arrow and Batman, I think, is the only two that we see.
Yeah.
And they're talking about that the tribe they're fighting are burrowers, their armor's compressed ultra rock, but they're doing the best they can to fight through. The next theater that he appears to contact is the Arctic, I guess, where we've got we see Mr. Terrific, we see Plastic Man, and we see the Flash. And Flash is kind of smarting off to Bat because Batman says, "John, I live in," and Batman or Flash finishes sentence for him. I live in a cave. I know my damn rocks. And then says, "How'd I do?"
Don't sound like that, Barry.
sorry, just speeding it along, Batman. Speaking of which, we're making headway in the Arctic Theater. Couldn't get close, but heating ice into steam disrupts their magnetism. Go science! Meanwhile, in the Equatorial Theater, where we see Swamp Thing and Wonder Woman, Wonder Woman remarks that each tribe seems evolutionarily distinct. The ones she's fighting are spellcasters, but the magic has no common root. There must be a codex I can access. So interesting that in recently with DC Metal and now with Justice League, DC Metal and Justice League, No Justice, and now Justice League, and in the upcoming Justice League Dark, where Wonder Woman's going to lead the Justice League Dark team, Snyder's really flipping her over to the magic corner of the DC universe. There's always been a magical aspect to like Paradise Island and perhaps her birth, being created out of clay and what have you. But it's not always been something that's like obvious and apparent. But it seems like Scott Snyder wants to kind of push her over into that direction, which I really enjoy. I think it's really cool. I mean, she does – a lot of her power is rooted in magic, and it gives her like a distinct area to kind of be like – the leader and the badass of, that kind of has her foot in both, worlds, like the natural superheroic world and also that behind the scenes magic world of the DC universe. So, John Jones remarks to Wonder Woman when she says, "There must be a codex I can access. I can sense it, a black flaming gem. Do you need me to?" She's like, "Nope. Help the others. After all, I'm the bleep Wonder Woman." How'd I do? She's making fun of Bruce as well. And Batman just says, "Diana." And Flash says, "Not bad at all." Next, we see the Aquatic Theater. Obviously, Aquaman is here as well as – I'm not even sure who that is in the background. Maybe Aqualad? They look like they kind of have a bluish costume with blonde hair.
Yeah, it's hard to tell.
Yeah, not sure at all. But Aquaman does remark that he's enjoying the telepathy, John. Never leave. And the Neanderthals that his team is fighting are semi-aquatic, and they're seeking to merge the toxic subterranean oceans with the seven seas to transform the Earth's waters. So not something Aquaman wants, obviously. Then we see the Sky Theater with Hawkman and Hawkgirl.
Who's that below them? The guy in red. He's a good guy, too. I think he's shooting.
Oh, yeah. That looks like Adam Strange.
Okay.
Yeah. Which he should – yeah, I was going to say he should be flying with a jetpack. And, yeah, as I say that, I see that, yeah, flame, some exhaust coming out of his pack. So, yeah, he's definitely flying with his jetpack. But Hawkgirl remarks that the Neanderthals have their eye on the skies as well. They're flying around with jetpacks. They're using crystal cannons to bind clouds with subterranean gases. And then she also remarks that she doesn't have a Batman voice yet, which is pretty funny. So again, John Jones floating above the Earth, gathering all this data, says the picture clears. Then Hawkgirl, eons ago, someone must have taken these groups of Neanderthals into different pocket ecosystems in the Earth and kind of guided their evolution for a purpose. His guess is Vandal Savage. It kind of seems like something he would do. And Superman remarks that it's another theater. We're not sure. I mean, maybe it's a surface theater. He's there with Cyborg. And Superman remarks, yes, this is John is right. This isn't an attack. It's evolutionary warfare. These Neanderthals are trying to make the Earth theirs. And Cyborg says, not on our watch. Come on, Cyborg, that was such a Batman line. No voice? And Cyborg says, no, was Superman here? Hell no. To which the response is, yeah, Clark's Batman is so the best.
No, it's not.
And I'm not sure who that is that's talking, though, in the red.
Oh, the purple? The purple is... I don't think it does show on the other pages. I think it's Wonder Woman.
Yeah, possibly.
I think it is. Come on, Bruce. It's so good.
Yeah, that's true. Because in the bottom panel, we see the long panel that goes across both pages. Batman remarks that Superman's impression of Batman is, in fact, not the best. No, it's not. Come on, Bruce. It's so good. Flash, you know, agrees. So good. So I kind of love this little back and forth that we get from them, because it shows that they're all, you know, they're teammates and they fight battles and they're risking their lives, but they're still friends. You know, it adds humanity.
I also like about it, the same with Bendis's Man of Steel book, is being a mostly Marvel reader who really only reads the darkest DC books like Batman and Hellblazer, this is far more self-aware and I don't know. It seems just a little bit more fun and self-aware. Like, we're all on a mission, but we're making fun of Batman's seriousness.
Yeah, exactly.
Like in Batman's just the line about Cyborg not being willing to do a Batman voice in front of Superman. Just like, it's a lot more fun. Or from Superman's line in Man of Steel 1 about not dropping the guys because he's not Batman, but he enjoys when Batman does it.
Yeah, 100%. It's
I love it.
It's showing that they can be risking their lives, but at the end of the day, they're still family. They're still friends. Because right after you get that banter on the next page on that long panel, we see Snyder say, the Justice League, the Martian. John Jones hovers above Earth, connecting them with his mind, holding them tightly, as I said. But then this next box is very telling. They are all allies. So as I mentioned, they're teammates. They're fighting together. They're his friends, even family. And he's been away from them for a long time, and he marvels at them now. So, again, they can be fighting, and they can be protecting the Earth, but they're also friends. They're also family. They can also joke around. And Nick's right. It does show a self-awareness and you know, the ability to joke around. It makes them a little more relatable. So then Martian Manhunter's thinking about the fact this attack's been 50 years in the making, but it's built on a pyramidal scale. It's the work of one of the League's greatest enemies, Vandal Savage, who I feel like doesn't get enough credit from the DC fans as really being one of the most powerful villains in the DCU. But I think he's not used. In the past, he hasn't been used quite as – he hasn't been used to his full potential, I'll say that. You know, a lot of times people talk about the greatest villains. You know, Lex Luthor always comes up, Darkseid, the Joker. But really, Vandal Savage should be up there with some of the most ruthless and dangerous villains of the DCU. But John's not worried. His friends fight without fear, and they are winning. So Flash continues to generate steam and have Mr. Terrific supercharge it. And Green Arrow and Batman have their opponents on the run as Batman guides them through the tunnels.
And Batman has the best armor ever. And
Batman has some giant armor.
With the big bat on the top, big blue bat.
That's like a headlight. It's like
It looks so cool.
Showing where he can go. Wonder Woman continues to steer toward the Flaming Onyx with the yield or die as she slices through her opponents. And John cheers them on, and yet he worries he's not worthy of the post. He hides this from them and is still hiding it when the battle suddenly turns. And John remarks, no. And Cyborg's like, John, what's happening? Superman says, the Earth's surface, it's breaking apart. Not just breaking apart, says Hot Girl. It's being ejected from the planet. John, are you seeing this? John says, I see this. And the view he has is literally the crust of the Earth rising up off of the planet. And the sight almost breaks John's concentration. He's from a planet where everyone lived connected. You know, all the Martians were connected telepathically until suddenly everything burned and they all died alone. So he's learned from that mistake, and he wills himself to hold on now. So Superman has scanned the Earth's core. It's not the cause. Magic isn't the cause either, according to Wonder Woman. And she says, John, we need – and John interrupts her, says, listen to me. Steal your minds, all of you. If you do, I can collect everything you've encountered and piece it together. It's trying to find out, you know, what's going on by seeing through their eyes and reading their thoughts about what they're experiencing. And Flash remarks, the whole world is – So do it, Flash, now, everyone. So I guess that answers our question about who is speaking in the red. It's Flash. Which doesn't necessarily...
No, that's what I thought. I thought we were talking about the bottom panel with the purple, where I think it's Wonder Woman. But yeah, the red's definitely Flash on that one page where he's like, come on, Cyborg!
Yeah, you're right. Yep. Okay,
so... he started the joke.
Yeah, exactly. So, John concentrates and figures out what's going on and then reaches out to Batman. The Neanderthals at the North Pole, their purpose was not to magnetize the Earth. It's the moon. It's the molten iron ring has become a cyclotron to pull the crust away from the Earth. So we need to destroy the moon. We need to destroy the cyclotron. John says, I'll strike it at full speed as a quonar, an extinct moon nester. And then this is really cool. Martian Manhunter says to Batman, can you activate the bombs you long ago planted as I make impact? And Batman says, bombs? In the moon? Martian Manhunter's not having it. Like, Bruce.
Fine.
Like, Bruce. It's just one word. Bruce?
Yeah.
Fine. Thank you.
I love that Batman's planted bombs in the moon. But yeah, of course he has.
Why wouldn't he? Well, he's got a bat cave on the moon. And of course, it's got the bat cave on the moon. It's got to be booby trapped because you wouldn't want it to fall into the wrong hands.
I didn't know there was a bat cave on the moon.
Bat cave on the moon?
That also makes perfect sense.
Yeah, there's a bat.
They haven't used it in a long time.
I don't know that the moon bat cave ever showed up in Batman. It showed up in Superman.
Okay.
Since Rebirth has started, Superman went and hid Lois and John there when they were being attacked by the doppelganger Clark Kent kind of person that turned out to be Mrs. Pitalik.
Yeah.
So yeah, he went and put them there on the bat cave in the moon to stay safe. So yes, there is a bat cave on the moon, which I'm assuming that's where these bombs are booby trapped. But yeah, great sequence. Like, you know, he's trying to deny it and Martian Manhunter is just like, Bruce, fine.
Again, like another just fun joke or wink at like how weird Batman kind of is, or how, yeah.
Yeah, prepare for every eventuality rather. So,
of course he's going to lie about it at first. Like, what?
Yeah, what do you mean bombs on the moon?
That's ridiculous, even for me.
So Martian Manhunter transforms himself into this quonar, which basically looks like a big giant green space dragon. And thinks to himself that he gives this plan 50% chance of working, but he doesn't let any of his friends know that. Instead, he holds them together so they will not feel alone no matter what happens. And as he nears impact to the moon, a chill runs through him, a sense that there's something he's not seen, something behind the danger, a greater darkness. And then from a vantage point on Earth, we see the moon blow up with a crackoom. And somebody says, we've lost the moon? Generation upon generation, our kind prepared, Vandal Savage, and it's actually the leader of one of the Neanderthal tribes. We see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 of them there, so one from each of the different theaters, and they're complaining. They're like, well, the moon's been destroyed. Have you brought us to failure? Savage, you promised us the Earth. Why did you rush the something? And he gets interrupted by Savage himself, who says that he saved them all from extinction, protected them for millennia, and now they're questioning him? How dare you? And no one responds. And he says, good, because this is only the first stage of my plan. The next stage starts now. I'll make good on my promise of our new Injustice Gang.
And then worst name ever for a group.
Well, it's not the first. I mean, it's been used quite a few times.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Injustice, I thought it was Gang. A joke.
No, it's been used quite a few times. And
yeah, because I've like heard Injustice League.
They were like always kind of – well, the first original Injustice Gang was kind of made up of B-level villains. Uh-huh. It's certainly – yeah, it's not a name of a team that would really strike fear into the hearts of people. You know, it's like Injustice Gang. It sounds like a bad Disney – after the special or something.
Like
so.
Spider-Man and Friends, if that were like the name of an attacking group, you'd be like, oh, all right. His friends, huh?
Yeah, so again, we get a voice off panel saying your plan will fail. Savage is annoyed. Who dares? And it's Lex Luthor. He says, I do, and I'm here to tell you that all your plans will fail, Savage, because you chose justice. And he's in his battle armor. Savage, surprised to see him, says, Lex Luthor? You have some gall coming here, and justice? Ha! Aren't you the one playing hero? He says, oh, I am a hero, as he pulls a blaster and fires at Savage. It's like, see what you've hidden from me and every other human on this planet, the darkest secret in the universe. Oh, I'm sorry. He says, see, I know what you've hidden from me and every other human on this planet, the darkest secret in the universe. I'm here to rescue you, Savage. So that's how he's considering himself a hero. But I think it's pretty clear that the experiment that Geoff Johns started with having Luthor be a hero is over.
Brainiac started it, right?
What's that?
Oh, you're talking about going back farther than No Justice?
Yeah, like in Rebirth, we saw...
Okay, yeah, yeah.
Before Rebirth, when the New 52 Superman died, we saw Lex take on that mantle. And really, mm-hmm. It started with Forever Evil. Forever Evil was really a Lex Luthor story, to hear Geoff Johns tell it. And that was at that point when Luthor was outwardly trying to appear more heroic. And Superman, when the pre-Flashpoint Superman took the New 52 Superman's place, you know, he's coming from a reality where Luthor was terrible and, you know, he always had things going on. And even when it was Superman, Lois, and Clark, and the pre-Flashpoint Superman was working behind the scenes, he was always trying to find some dirt on this version of Lex Luthor, trying to find a reason to judge him. But we saw some of the story arcs that were told in Action Comics and Superman that Superman, he risked his life. He defended Luthor several times because he couldn't find any evidence that this Luthor was doing anything but trying to be a hero. His battle armor was blue. He was wearing the Superman crest. He was wearing the red cape. He was doing everything he could to try to legitimately be a hero. He was even invited to join the Justice League after Forever Evil. But recently we saw in Superman 1000 that it doesn't seem to be the case anymore. And I think Snyder's really bringing him back to his villainous roots here. Because look, his armor's not even blue anymore. He doesn't have the Superman color scheme. He's back to the green and purple evil battle suit that we've known for all these years. And clearly he knows he still sees himself as the hero, which I think Luthor has always seen himself as a hero, even when doing terrible things. He always, you know, he's one probably for utilitarianism, although he's too selfish to really follow through with it. But if you were to ask him, he'd be like, well, the reason I need to have all this power and I need to be the one making the decision is because I know best, because I'm smarter than everybody else. And I totally am willing to break some eggs to make the omelet. And so, he's always been the hero of his own story, but he comes right out and says it here. I am a hero. And he knows that Savage knows whatever the darkest secret of the universe is. And now Luthor himself knows it as well. And he's here to rescue you, Savage. I'm here to rescue you, Savage, from life. Meanwhile, we get a flashback from John Jones back to when his planet exploded in fire. That is the one weakness that Martians have, and Martian Manhunter has as well, is fire. And his wife says, John, you sure about this? John says, yes, we need to sever all the connections to the great mind quickly. Their child says, Daddy, I'm scared. The screams in my head. Everyone is. And John says, we'll be all right, little heart, but you must close your mind. Please do it. I'll be alone, though. And now, Kim. But it's too late. The great mind is burning. We must reconnect. Together we might. John says, no, I'll not risk it. Daddy. And he sees his daughter burn away to nothing. So John's remembering that as he stands on the moon thinking, no, no. And then Superman reaches out to him. John, it's Clark. Are you there? I'm here, Kal-El. You did it, old friend. Swamp Thing is rebinding the Earth. Batman? Yeah, subterranean threat's been repelled. Aquaman? Animal Man and Vixen and I. So that must have been Animal Man we saw in the background with the blonde hair. Animal Man, Vixen and I are going to get the super fauna to repair the ocean currents. Looks like it's over. John says, no, it's not. Batman says, what is it, John? It's big, Bruce. We need to meet. Psychic boardroom starting. How about that, right? We don't need any Zoom meetings. We don't need any Skype. We don't need any Google Hangouts. We have Martian Manhunter. Psychic boardroom starting now.
I love that new detail too. It's like, you don't really need the Hall of Justice or the Watchtower.
Nope. They all appear to be floating in space. And when I say all, it's Martian Manhunter, Cyborg, Batman, Superman, Hawkgirl. That's an interesting choice as one of kind of the inner circle. I would think more likely it would be a Green Lantern.
I didn't even notice the absence of a Green Lantern. Interesting.
I mean, they're adding in an eighth here, right? Because, I mean, Justice League originally founding seven, but Green Lantern has been replaced by Hawkgirl. And then you've got both Cyborg and Martian Manhunter, which brings the number up to eight. The rest remain the same. Batman, Superman, Aquaman, Wonder Woman, and Flash. And Kendra remarks, wow, it feels so real. Martian Manhunter says, thank you. It will become more material the more often we utilize it. This is a first iteration. And the table they're on has that same symbol we saw on the doorknobs that looks kind of like a silhouette of the Hall of Justice. Flash says, you know, I wouldn't mind. Man, I know it's just my mind hugging you, but I'll take it. You did great, John. What's wrong? And John remarks that he brought them there because while on the moon, he detected something bigger in Savage's plans. And Cyborg, ever the strategist, is like, yeah, attack felt premature, like the tribes weren't ready. And John says, exactly. The real move, or Savage's real hope, was that the Earth, once its crust would shed, would drift out of orbit, move out of the way. And Superman's like, out of the way of what? And then this starting to tie into Dark Metal here and No Justice. As you know, after battling the Dark Multiverse, the Source Wall was broken. And ever since then, the multiverse has been leaking energy, bleeding. But something moments ago came to life, something containing all the wall's energy, its power, almost like its battery core. This totality is rocketing toward Earth and will impact in 3 minutes. They don't exactly have a lot of time to make a decision. And Batman's like, Vic, can you get a read on it? And he says, yeah, scanning now. Holy, the energy is older than anything in the multiverse, but it's moving with a kind of purpose, phasing. So again, we talked on that opening page about how this totality, whatever it is existing in all times. And so it must be like phasing through time, because according to John Jones, but moments ago, something came to life. So it just now happened, but yet 85,000 years ago, they see it starting to happen. 85,000 years from now, they see it start to happen. So clearly, Snyder's playing with some kind of time thing here, or maybe he's just trying to show how whatever this totality is, that it's connected to everywhere and every when of the DC universe. So Superman wonders if it's coming there for a reason. If their multiverse is dying, maybe this thing can help. And Shara responds, or Kendra rather, sure, like the Omega Titans did. And you'll have to see Justice League No Justice to find out what that's all about. And Cyborg says, I don't know, it's sending some kind of code, can't decipher it, but it is mathematical, architectural, like this. And he starts showing some glowing red lines. And Batman says, well, you know, there's a myth on New Genesis that the Source Wall was an incubator, and that when our universe was ready, a messenger would come through with a code to evolve our universe. And Flash is like, wait. For those of us still getting over the moon blowing up thing, you're saying that the heart of the Source Wall just started rocketing toward the planet, and there's a message in there that might give anyone who decodes it limitless power, or it could kill us all, and it hits in 3 minutes. So thanks for the sum up there, Flash. But John corrects him, saying, well, yeah, but 2 minutes now. Flash, okay, just checking. What do we do? In typical Flash fashion. So meanwhile, we shift back to the villains of the piece. The Neanderthal saying, we will follow you. Yes, Luthar is your name. Then Luthar, we pledge our allegiance to you. And apparently the beam that Luthar fired at Vandal Savage froze him because he demands to be unfrozen. And Luthar responds to the Neanderthals, oh, you're going to pledge your allegiance to me? And they say, yeah, we're the leaders of proud lines, inheritors of this planet. We'll follow you proudly. We'll be your injustice gang. Luthor says, my Injustice gang? Let me think it over. No. Hits a button on his gauntlet, and the floor opens up from beneath them, and they all fall through. Meanwhile, John is thinking, time's running out. We need to decide what we're going to do. Who will we be? The totality is passing Mars. We have a minute and a half. Cyborg says, how do we even stop it? Batman, of course, we have a possible contingency, as if, you know, he's Batman. He tries to plan for everything. Kendra's surprised, we do? Batman says, yeah, I just called him. John Stewart of the Green Lantern Corps standing by. And it's an incredible panel. He's got this gun strapped to him that is just like the gun to like end all guns. It's massive. It's got a giant strap and a backpack. Cause apparently he can't even hold it up himself. But the thing is, it's all generated by his will, right? We see his lantern ring, glowing brightly. And the gun that he created, it's all meant to, contain this special bullet, right? Their contingency. The bullet contains a miniaturized omniversal wormhole, and it's encased in 10th metal. It should transport the totality outside the source wall, destroying it. Batman says, we can give the order. Aquaman's like, you know, I regret my stance, but this thing, if it's sentient, I've known evil gods, I say we fire. But Wonder Woman says, you know, but if our multiverse is dying, you know, maybe they should let it happen, is what she's insinuating. Flash says, yeah, it is dying. Hal's readings are correct. In a year, maybe less, it'll expel all the energy, planets, universes. You know, maybe that the thing is the key. It's unknown, but so was the Speed Force at one point. And Cyborg remarks, yeah, the multiverse was unknown at one point, the dark multiverse. You know, we need to see what this totality is, what it wants. We shift back to Luthor and Vandal Savage. And Luthor's trying to get more information out of Savage, saying, I want to hear you say it, Savage. I want to hear that you knew all along what the source world really was and what was inside it. Vandal Savage says, don't do this, Luthor. And we hear a knock, knock at the door. Luthor, huh, who could that be? Vandal Savage, Luthor, listen to me. We can join forces and no, you listen, Savage. You, the one human being who knew the truth, coward. Now the final moment's upon us. You built an Injustice gang. Well, you know what this moment really needed? Was a damn legion. And in through the door come Sinestro, Gorilla Grodd, the Joker, Black Manta, and Cheetah. And Nick had alluded to this line earlier when we talked about Justice League on our New Comic Wednesday episode. Language Lex.
Guess love it.
Like, didn't like the use of the word damn legion. And then the Joker says, there are bleeping children listening somewhere. Yeah, way to go. Way to go, Joker. Luthor continues that when he learned the secret, he actually had LexCorp acquire the contract and alter the construction of the base. So, you know, all this time, Vandal Savage thought that this base was being built for him, right? And Lex is like, that's what I let you think. But actually, you know, it's my base. I'm ready. I put a monster in the basement. Savage says this place has no basement. I put weapons from the future in the attic. There is no attic. So there are a lot of things about the base that Savage actually doesn't know because Luthor was working behind the scenes. And he says, recognize this, a simple doorknob. You probably can't see it because it requires inner vision. It was the key. It also happens to be made of the only thing that can kill you. Luthor, I beg you, kill me if you must, but the truth you seek, don't. It's too horrible. Oh, I know, and I can't wait. So, I mean, clearly, there is no doubt that Luthor has gone back over to the dark side, so to speak. So, meanwhile, we go back to the psychic boardroom. John Jones says, barely a minute left. And Kendra says, I guess it could be a blueprint, a way to evolve the universe from dinosaur to bird. Of course, Hot Girl would say that. And Aquaman's still not convinced, though. It could be a damn extinction-level event. We have a responsibility to this planet, right, John? And he says, I have something to say. For a while now, I've resisted being called your chairman. The truth is, I worry about my place on the team. Superman's like, what are you talking about, dude? You just saved the planet. And John's not convinced. He said, you would have figured out what was going on with the moon on your own. and Diana would have found the Onyx without me, but you all are the Justice League. I was gone for a long time. I was on a search for answers about the death of my planet, and I did not discover the spark that burned my people, but what I did learn why they burned, and it was because they closed themselves off, right? They all disconnected from that central, like, hive mind, you know, disconnected from one another, and so each of us died alone, my wife, my daughter, part of me. But what I've found in you is you took me in, and since then I've seen my purpose to connect us, to hold us together. But maybe I have something even more to offer. There was no word for justice on my planet. The closest was the symbol on this table. So we learned that symbol in the silhouette of the Hall of Justice itself is a Martian symbol.
Including the doorknob.
Right. Same as the one on the doorknob. Yeah. Right. It meant going beyond what was supposed to be possible, the natural laws, imposing on the universe a higher standard and ideal. On Mars, we forgot that ideal, which was to remain open to each other, but also to discovery. So when I saw the totality, my vote was going to be to destroy it. But if I'm to be your chairman, my job must go beyond just connecting you. I must remind you who you are and how you inspire us to all be better than we should be, myself included. So it seems like John is going to let it happen. Back at the Hall of Injustice, I suppose, we see Lex Luthor. Now I, Lex Luthor, sentence you, Vandal Savage, to death. And he's like beating him to death with that doorknob that he's holding, which apparently is the only substance that can kill Vandal Savage.
Do we know what that is?
I don't.
Okay, but I'm sure it's somewhere listed before.
Possibly. Or
it's not like it's a new substance, I'm assuming.
I don't know. I really don't know. I didn't know that there was a specific substance that could kill Vandal Savage, so it might be a new concept from Snyder. Or maybe there is some previous history of the DCU that has some substance that can kill Savage. Not sure. So, meanwhile, in the psychic boardroom for justice, as it should be, Martian Manhunter starts to grieve for Just, and then suddenly he stops. He heard something, a cry, a shriek older than any human scream, a mind reaching out to him as it died, casting out all its secrets. So I'm thinking that's Vandal Savage at the moment of his death, which... Again, I mean, although Vandal Savage has been underutilized, as I talked about earlier, he's still like a really major villain to be killed off, you know, so early on in this run. But the shriek shook Martian Manhunter so violently, he lost his connection to his friends. And all at once, he's alone. And with his mind, he saw the truths. He saw things he'd never want to know about the past, about sins committed. And we see, and it looks like the arm of Lex Luthor killing Starman, like choking him. Abominations unearthed, and we see a hand reaching for something glowing buried in the ground. And then he even saw what was coming, new armies raised across space. Not sure what that is at all, just some kind of lightning and a couple purple figures. And ancient gods revived, and it looks like Darkseid is no longer a baby and is back to his grown self. But beyond this, he saw the laughter, which... evil would rise. And then on the following page, we see him more in his traditional Martian form. As he sees his own past, he sees the end of the cry. He sees himself alone. Just months from now, at the end of everything, the last living thing in the Omniverse, everyone, even his friends, burned to dust. And he's like looking at a face that looks quite alien, which is just massive. It dwarfs him in size. And all of this is because he didn't realize, he didn't understand that everything, the multiverse, from the birth to maturity to crisis after crisis, all of it had been built on an unseen door. And now in this moment, as their table hangs in the air, his friends have unlocked that door. And all he wants to do is go back. Go back now, he tells himself, change their minds. And so he does. He goes back to change their minds. But as he reforms the boardroom, his friends are gone. It's too late. So he watched the thing come, the totality. He told himself that what he'd seen wasn't true, trying to block it out. He's trying to tell himself that whatever was inside the totality was good. Some part of him sensed otherwise, but it sensed an adversary out there, someone on the other end. But he knew that the lines in that signal might very well point away, that justice might instead point downward to a word that sounded a lot more like doom. So perhaps that symbol that symbolized justice with the lines coming out the top, if you flip it over, their lines are pointing down.
Maybe I didn't even notice that the first time.
Maybe to a downfall. And we do get in the panel showing the Legion of Doom with Vandal Savage slung over Gorilla Grodd's shoulder. Another symbol, which looks similar, that's in red rather than the Justice League blue, with an arrow that points up. But again, the bottom of that very well may be lines pointing down. So Luther himself knows what's going on. He senses it because he says to himself, "Oh, John, here we go in 3, 2, 1, doom." So next we've got Doom on Earth. Who knows what comes next? I was completely blown away by this issue. It was way more impactful. The story was so much bigger than I expected. If anything, in Scott Snyder's Batman run, he really dug deep into who Batman was as a character, but in a way through wanting to explore who Batman is as a character and his motivations and all that. It was kind of a situation where the storytelling was a bit decompressed. What we saw in DC Metal was the first time I really saw Snyder telling a story that was so big that it almost felt like the comics themselves didn't have enough pages to do everything you wanted to do. And he can kind of confirm that on a DC Metal panel most recently here at Phoenix Comic Fest. So I thought maybe this would be somewhere in the middle of that, but I think it's more toward the metal side, where this is a story that's got so much going on that there's not enough room to tell it all in one comic, right? Like even as he plans out his arcs of Justice League, there are things and ideas that you've got to pick up on between the panels to kind of understand, because the story is like too big, right? He needs every issue to be like a 48-page issue, because at every issue, when you talk about structure as a comic writer, and Snyder will be the one to tell you this, you really need some sense of resolution in each issue to keep the reader engaged and let them kind of have the feeling that what they read was worthwhile, right? Like, you have at least some conflict that's resolved, some payoff. So if you just tell stories that just continually end on cliffhangers and there's never any payoff, people can get frustrated. They don't necessarily follow along with the title. They'll drop off. So you've got to give some kind of, you know, sense of resolution. You can't just tell giant 48-page open-ended stories and put in every little detail. There's just the way story goes, the structure of story, you've got to leave some stuff on the shelf, right? You've got to have some little payoffs throughout the larger narrative so that people will feel rewarded for reading it, rather than just constant question, building on more questions. So part of that dictates the way that these stories go, right? And feel like maybe we're not getting everything, we're not getting every idea Snyder has, we're not getting every concept explained to us explicitly. That being said, again, I just didn't expect it to be this level of importance, right? I didn't expect it to be like, I mean, this is like DC universe changing stuff. I mean, there's so often you read these events and the tagline is some hyperbole of, "The DC universe will never be the same again after this issue." And most of the time it's just crap, right? I mean, it's just comic speak and, you know, things change for the duration of the story, but then go back to status quo. This does not feel like that at all. Like, this feels like really holy crap moments, that are going to affect the DC universe going forward for years. And he's built it into, the past of the DCU. Like he did with Court of Owls and Batman. And that's maybe a good story to compare this to, right? So what Court of Owls and his story for Batman did for Batman as a character, it looks like he's now doing with Justice League and really affecting the whole entire DC universe. I think I heard him say several times over the past couple of months about DC Metal, If you think of the DC universe as the water in a fishbowl, now that the source well's broken, you've taken that water in the fishbowl and you've dumped it into the ocean.
I love that.
Like, that's how
vast, that is what it seems like so far.
Right? That's how vast this change is. And I think everybody was kind of taking that as some hyperbole as well. But with this first issue, he's proving that that's really the case. Like, he's opening up all these great ideas that can fuel ideas for stories to be told in the DC universe by him and all kinds of current DC writers and future DC writers for years and years to come. So I feel like if you're a fan of DC Comics, like you're a fan of the DC universe, you have to be reading Justice League. You absolutely have to, because it's going to really affect the universe in unimaginable ways going forward.
Completely agree. I'll say there's one source wall that they can never possibly break, and that's the one that separates DC from Marvel these days.
You know what's funny is Heath.
I know they did a crossover once upon a time. But
they've done several crossovers over the year, but it's funny you mentioned that. So in that same DC Metal panel, Scott Snyder was telling a story about talking to Grant Morrison, and he's talking about breaking the source wall and ideas and whatever. And Grant's like, "Oh, I could tell you exactly what's on the other side of the source wall." I know my Scottish accent's terrible, but Scott Snyder's like, "Okay, what's on the other side of the source wall, Grant?" Grant's like, "Marvel."
Exactly.
Marvel's on the other side.
Did you watch that video I sent you? Well, there are little connections being thrown in, just by individual artists.
No, because you sent it to me when I was at work, and so I couldn't watch it then. And then by the time I got home, I forgot about it.
Like, one of them is Lockjaw. It's from Lockjaw. He's like transporting through different universes, and like shows three on a page. And one of them says redacted, and you see the legs of Superman and Wonder Woman floating in the air. And DC has been doing some stuff like that too. Nothing official, but artists winking at each other.
Yeah. I mean, everybody's friend. That's the thing. Like, people don't understand. Sometimes comic fans, especially fans of the universes, of the cinematic universes, right? Like, you have so many fans of the MCU that spit all kinds of vitriol and angst at fans of the DC extended universe, and Marvel's better, DC's better, Marvel's better, DC, and they get in fights, and you're not allowed to like both and picking sides and whatever. This isn't red and blue, man. This isn't Republican and Democrat. Comics is a small industry. People are friends. People that work at DC are friends with people that work at Marvel. People that work at Marvel are friends with people, like a rising tide like floats all boats. Plus, people flip back and forth. Some people work on titles at both. They're freelance for both. I write for DC and I write for Marvel. Some people are under exclusive contracts, is true. But some people will have an exclusive contract with Marvel for a while, then they'll go over to DC and have an exclusive contract with DC. I mean, look at Brian Michael Bendis. Everybody roots for everybody. Scott Snyder himself recently released a YouTube video talking about Beginnings, was the name of it. It's completely worth watching if you haven't seen it. It's a bit long and the audio kind of goes up and down. It's his first try at this, and he didn't get everything quite dialed in. So just be patient as far as that's concerned. But there's a lot of good stuff in there, especially if you aspire to be a writer. But he specifically talks about the fact that he'll call up Donnie Cates, who's Marvel exclusive, and break down story with Donnie and pick Donnie's brain. So, or same thing with Charles Soule. He's, you know, Charles Soule is exclusive at Marvel, and him and Scott Snyder are like best friends. So please stop with the Marvel's better, DC better. Like, yeah, I might bash Marvel like much more than I complain about DC these days. But I kind of feel like that's deserved because they keep rebooting every other week. But I do it because I want them to stop doing it and I want them to be better. It's not because I'm rooting for them to fail. I want Marvel Comics to be really good. I want people to be able to follow it and know what book comes where and, you know, not be confused because there's seven different Captain America number ones. So I do it out of a place of love. Okay.
Amen.
So yeah, there's no reason.
You gotta love it all.
There's no reason why they couldn't do a crossover in the future. But somebody usually asks that question at San Diego Comic-Con every year at the publishers panel. Hey, Dan Didio. Hey, Jim Lee. When are we going to get another Marvel DC crossover? And the truth of the matter is, Marvel was doing so well for so long, they had no real need to do it. They had no real need to do a crossover. And now it's kind of flipped. DC's doing really great with sales, and there's no real need to do a crossover. Like, I mean, not that they don't want Marvel to do well.
Yeah, no, no. They're
going to go out of their way and cause themselves more work and more trouble to try to bring Marvel's sales up. I mean, they're doing fine on their own.
I've never read the other ones, but I hear they're kind of like a little bit bullshit, or because you like have one team's character versus another team's character fighting, and in the end it's kind of like, well, they're one wins, I heard, but it's more like we have to be fair to both companies. It's not like Avengers team versus X-Men. It's like we have to be fair.
Yeah, and I mean, we talk about intercompany crossovers. It's not always a big event. Like they had a Justice League Avengers one. They had the
cross characters, right?
They had the amalgam. Like, yeah, they had the amalgam where
like Dark Claw or whatever.
Yeah, you had Dark Claw. You had Spider Boy, which was
Super Soldier.
Superboy and Spider Man. Yeah, Super Soldier, which was like Guardian and Captain America. Thorion, which was like Thor and Orion. Iron Lantern, which was like Iron Man and Green Lantern. And then there was, I can't remember what the Wonder Woman one was called. Amazon, maybe? And it was,
I would just love if one day they did Storm break that source wall.
Doctor Strange Fate, which was Doctor Fate and Doctor Strange. But there have been others. There's been like a Batman. There was a Batman Punisher. I think there was a Batman Daredevil.
Those would be cool.
There was a new Teen Titans X-Men crossover at one point. So it's not – they weren't always big events. Sometimes they were just like one story. You know, there was a Superman Spider-Man that was like a giant, you know, oversized comic. And by oversized, I don't mean more pages. I mean it was like, I don't know.
40, yeah, when they used to do those.
Yeah, 48 inches by 36 inches or whatever. So yeah, I just don't think that it'll happen anytime soon because I don't think there's an
need
for it. But yeah, this Justice League book, man, I mean, it's absolutely incredible. And I'm sure that there's Easter eggs and there's little hints that Snyder put in here that we completely missed or we didn't attach significance to it because we just don't know. Like, you know, I haven't read every DC comic ever. I don't know exactly what books Scott Snyder read that he's pulling from, but he has said in multiple interviews, even when he talked to us, about how he really wants this to be a love letter to the DC universe and for all its fans. He wants to pull in people like Detective Chimp and, you know, pull in characters from way back when. And he said it so many times, doors open in June for the Hall of Justice and everybody's invited. It's going to be exploring a lot of different ideas and taking advantage of the history and the legacy of the DC universe to pull things from the past to make you feel like the stories you read in the past counted for something. They matter because they affect the Justice League story he's telling and thus the overall DC universe overall going forward. So it was a great title. It vastly exceeded my expectations. I knew it would be good because it's Scott Snyder, but I just didn't anticipate the magnitude of the story that he's telling. I feel like this is the most important story since Crisis on Infinite Earths. That's how huge this story feels to me and how impactful. So
as a Marvel fan, this is exactly what Marvel should be doing instead of like Infinity Wars or, you know, like they need to blow up their universe a little bit too. Like,
I think that's exactly
more than number ones. They need to be like,
well, that's exactly like what Secret Wars, I think Jonathan Hickman's Secret Wars was supposed to be.
The most recent one?
Yeah, the most recent one. The problem was that
it's kind of the opposite, though. It shrunk the world, it felt like.
Yeah.
Wasn't it all about combining the Ultimate and the...
Yeah, sort of. I mean, it was about cleaning up, whether they admitted it or not. But I think the failure of Secret Wars was the lateness of it. It ended up being so late that it ended with a whimper rather than a bang. And all the other series that a lot of the number ones that were supposed to come out of Secret Wars already launched.
I remember that debacle.
They shot themselves in the foot. I really like, as much as I don't know. I haven't read Secret Wars. I don't know how successful it is as a story. And I didn't read a lot of the titles coming out of it, a lot of the relaunches. But yeah, they should have had Secret Wars completely in the can, ready to go before. I mean, the fact that issue 8 didn't come out till like 4 months later, after you had already relaunched the all new, all different. This was the second version of the all new, all different Marvel Universe, by the way. Yeah, I mean, Iron Man 1 came out in October, and then the last issue of Secret Wars, I don't think came out till like February or March. So yeah, I mean, by that time, you've ruined the ending. We know what's happened. Yeah, it just awful. Terrible, terrible, terrible planning. So, anything else you have to add?
No, I love the book too. I mean, yeah, I can't believe how big a scale this has gone to, even coming off of No Justice, which was a pretty damn big deal, and Dark Knight's Metal, which was also a big deal.
Exactly. So, yeah.
I didn't believe them at first, and they're like, Dark Knight Metal's going to change everything. It's like, yeah, how many times do you hear that? But now it's like...
Exactly. Yeah,
it has.
I felt like with the end of, so I felt like with Dark Knight's Metal, the biggest things that come out of it were the new characters of the dark versions of Batman, you know, the evil versions, and the fact that the source wall was broken, and maybe they'd get back to that at some point. But then it was clear with No Justice that, okay, they're not taking a break from the source wall being broken, and it's not going to have consequences down the road. There's consequences now.
Yeah.
And again, it's like they could have let it linger as a subplot for 6 months or whatever and have it not be like that big of a deal or immediately addressed. But yeah, with the first issue of Justice League, it's like, nope, shit's getting real. It's happening. It's going down right now. You need to pick up Justice League and find out what the heck's going on. I'm really glad this is a bi-weekly also. So I don't have to wait a whole month for issue two, only 2 weeks. So we'll definitely be spotlighting issue two after it comes out. We've had a chance to read it. So. Look for these Justice League spotlights on Friday again, every Friday. Again, I'm not sure how long we'll do the spotlights. The story is going to kind of dictate that. As you can imagine with a daily podcast and some days, like currently Tuesdays and Sundays, we're releasing 2 episodes. So we're stretched pretty thin over here. But you know, as long as the story gets us this excited, I imagine we'll find time to spotlight it and break it down. Again, spoilers. I probably should have said that at the beginning of the issue. I did say we'd go page by page, panel by panel.
That's a spoiler warning right there.
And I'll definitely put it in the show notes. And I may put a little note at the beginning too, to just make it clear to everybody. Just like the Superman Sundays, just like the Secret War Saturdays, the Justice League Fridays will be completely spoiler filled. So if you don't want the story spoiled for you, you know, you need to be sure to read the issue before we talk about it. And we're not going to talk about it the Friday after the book comes out. We're going to give you a whole week to read it. So like, for example, Justice League number one came out on, was it the 6th of June? And this episode is being released on the 15th of June. So you've got a whole week plus 2 days to read it before the next spotlight will come out. So if we go any further past that, then we start bumping into the next issue. So we want to be sure that we avoid that. So if you haven't had a chance to read it when we release these, then hey, just, you know, move on to our next episode and come back to it when you get a chance if you don't want it spoiled for you. So, again, we appreciate everybody's support. Numbers continue to grow, which is just, you know, outstanding. So if you want to listen to any past episodes of the podcast, you can go to lrmonline.com for all previous episodes. Twitter.com/TheComicSource is where we can be found on Twitter. Do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to follow us on those social platforms. All three spots are great places to find out when we release new episodes, as well as follow all our convention coverage. And speaking of conventions, as you are listening to this, as it's being released, as I said, Friday, June 15th, that's the first day of Denver Comic Con.
Woo! We're having a blast.
Exactly. If you're listening on Friday as this is released, Nick and I currently are at the Denver the Colorado Convention Center. Is that what it's called?
I think so. Yeah, Colorado Convention Center.
Yeah. So if you're in the Denver area, get your butt down there. Track Nick and I down. We'll hook you up with a free lanyard. We'll take a picture. We'll find out what you like about the show and what you don't. We always love to meet listeners. So we'll be there Friday the 15th, Saturday the 16th, Sunday the 17th, getting interviews and talking to creators and just enjoying the great convention atmosphere. I've never been to Denver Comic Con before, so I'm really looking forward to it. Never actually been to Denver before, so.
Oh, really?
Yeah, looking forward to it. You did you go to the convention? You went to the convention last year, right?
Yeah, it was my first time I've ever been to any convention, so I don't know what to compare it to otherwise.
So yeah, this is going to be, I really encourage all you listeners to follow along our Instagram this weekend for Denver Comic Con, because I'm going to be introducing Nick to a whole new world of convention going. You know, we go pretty hard to try to generate as much content for you all as we can. So again, thanks for listening, everybody, and we'll talk to you next time.
Bye.